Show. The Ask Pastor Show is brought to you by Hattie.com. Now, here's your host, Jay Basser. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Basser Hour. Got my co-host and sidekick with me here today, Mr. Gerald Cook, out of the beautiful but cold city of Joplin, Missouri. Gerald, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm shivering. It's cold.
Is that because of the weather? Is that because of Parkinson's?
Well, a little. You mix them up, you know, John, and you really got an issue. You don't know what to do.
I want to come
Put
get you and take
your gloves
fishing.
And your hand down.
I want to come get you and take you fishing. There's a fishing technique called using a shaky head worm.
Well, I can handle that. Yeah.
And you put your worm on this little jig head. You throw it out there, and you sit there and you shake it all until the fish comes and gets it. That's called a shaky head. I figured with your Parkinson's, you might be good at that.
I could shake the dickens out here. You sure enough.
I'm just picking on you. Anybody with Parkinson's, folks, that's a debilitating disease, and I'm sure Gerald's had it for quite some time, and I'm sure that it's aggravating to a point to where, you know, it's life changing. And it makes it hard to eat or anything, though, buddy.
Well, it's really hard on you when you're, you know, I'm a watchmaker, and I have a lot of trouble nowadays. I can't do it no more.
Well, anytime you deal with machinery and, you know, if you're doing, you know, like fine dexterity movements of your hand and things like that, it makes it impossible. And it disables you.
I have trouble with that mainspring. It keeps wanting to go somewhere else where it's supposed to.
They're going to tie you down, son. Tie your hands down.
Yeah. Threading the needle is another issue.
Yeah, well, you got to turn the machine on and catch it where it's running. That way you can keep up with it.
Yeah, that's I got a better chance, yeah.
Oh, Lord. We were going to discuss an issue tonight, guys, that for folks that is really, really important. This issue is probably the most debilitating disease that a person can get, you know, not in just veterans' angles, but any angle. The name of this disease is called amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. You've heard of it probably in other terms as Lou Gehrig's disease.
ALS.
ALS. Hey. Now, little history on this. Lou Gehrig, you know, for your folks, you know, in the older echelon, I remember Lou Gehrig. I don't remember him, but, I'm a baseball fan, so I follow him, and I know his career. He played for the New York Yankees, and he played beside Babe Ruth. He was the first baseman. They called him the Iron Man. He played for years and years and years at first base, never took a day off. And he actually contracted this disease in his last year of playing baseball. He started having these issues to where he couldn't even see the ball, or he'd swing and, you know, and things like that, and he couldn't feel the ball anymore, and he just kind of, he'd black out more or less. And so he went to the doctor, and they had no idea what was wrong with him, and finally this one young specialist just made a guess, really, with the tests they did, and decided he had ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease. It's a very rare disease back then. And he died, you know, he died a while later after he contracted the disease. But, you know, that was the first major person that died with it. So they went ahead and named it Lou Gehrig's disease as he passed away.
I think it's 3 to 5 years, John.
3 to 5 years.
Life expectancy. Depending on when they catch it, of course, they got new meds now that they're playing around with, and they're playing around with stem cells and stuff, and they're hoping, anyway, But as of now, there's no cure for it that we're aware of.
No, and it probably never will be. What it is a neuromuscular disease, a neurological disease. And anytime your nerves start attacking your body, you know, that's your central nervous system. And, you know, I don't think that they're, I mean, maybe in the future they'll have an issue and they'll be able to cure it, but with our technology now, there's probably no way. But what it does, it attacks certain parts of your body, you know, muscles and in any nerve, you know, nerve control everything.
Yeah.
And they start.
It kind of says here that it's a motor neuron disease and mm-hmm. it mainly damages the upper and lower motor neurons and the spinal cord and the brainstem motor mm-hmm. Nuclei. You know, this is serious stuff.
Well, it's so serious that... And we all know the VA, right? The VA don't like to make anything presumptive, right?
That's for sure.
God forbid they make something presumptive to make you lose your job for doing something like that. It's giving away money, right?
Well, that's true.
It's just in case Bob's listening. But ALS is a presumptive. As long as you serve the required 90 or more continuous days in the military, you've got a diagnosis ALS. It don't matter when you served. It's an automatic 100%.
Yes, it is.
That was changed on February 20, 2011. And then the more problems you have with your extremities or legs or arms, you know, then especially once the compensations start kicking in because you start losing... You know, you start losing your legs and arms. You start getting automotive grants and higher levels of S&C. So a person in their last stages. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, you can get up to, what, $8,000.
You can get R2.
R2.
You can get R2.
Which is a pretty good sum of money. Unfortunately, the life expectancy of that veteran is not the longest. Depends on what stage they catch it in. But, you know, if you have it, by all means, file a claim.
Yeah. Any veteran's got it should file a claim. And any veterans died from it and wasn't service-connected, I think they need to... The spouse needs to file a claim because she should be able for DIC.
You know, I was reading on here, John. Berta had posted quite a bit of stuff about ALS mm-hmm. on widows. For instance, this one widow was a certain age and her husband died with ALS. And she remarried, and they was wanting to know if she would still qualify. And according to the regulations, after the age, she can remarry after the age of 57 and retain her additional VA benefits, such as DIC and dependency. So be sure to remember that. You widows out there, if your husband could have possibly passed on due to ALS, you certainly want to talk to someone. I would recommend an attorney, but...
Well, you can't. Until, because you have to file a claim yourself. You have to file like a regular claim, the widow does. You have to file a DIC claim and say that he died from ALS and show the death certificate. They should serve a stick, but then you can't get an attorney until it's denied. That's still the same thing.
That's true.
That makes it, it stacks the deck against anybody. You know how that is, Gerald. It's not very much in favor of the veteran, so... and hopefully things like that will change in the future. I think they've got some good people in place to order to change that, but we'll see what happens. Because time will tell everything.
Let's keep our fingers crossed. Let's keep our fingers crossed. At least go for it. You know, if you're within doubt, go for it and get a denial or SOC from the BA.
Most people call it an SOC. I call it SOL.
Anyway, get a response back from the BA, and you may find out that you are certainly entitled to it if your spouse has passed on due to Lou Gehrig, ALS.
Yeah. So, and if you know anybody out there, folks, that's died from ALS and, you know, they were in service, talk with their wife and see what's going on with it, see if they've got any benefits from the VA over it. A lot of them don't even know it.
And that's the shameful part, because the VA is certainly not going to notify anyone.
No, they're not going to volunteer anything.
If you know any widows or widowers out there that their spouses had passed on due to ALS, have them contact a service organization or file a claim yourself.
Just say my husband died from ALS. He served in a 90-day required period or whatever. Here's his death certificate. And, of course, they're not going to go back today. You know, they're not going to go back on it, but they still pay you, you know, starting whatever. And you should be entitled to Champ V insurance, too, you know. I mean, it happens to young and old. I mean, even people that's, you know, in their 30s, has been, you know, this guy that served has been out for a while, they're getting it.
They're claiming you really want to start watching from age 40 up, and but I would suspect being a neurological disorder such as it is, that it could hit you even earlier than the 30s. Than the 40s.
Well.
If you're one of these running around here with tremors and what have you, I don't know. I would suspect they do have a test for that, don't they, John?
Yeah, they got all kinds of tests. And there's different types of neuromuscular disorders, too. You know, you've got ALS, of course, and you've got the ones that aren't fatal. You've got, but you've got muscular dystrophy, and then you've got, there's another one that's... I'm trying to remember what it is, but my wife's cousin's got that one. She's been in a wheelchair for years from it now. But you get lesions on your nerves, you've seen those, Gerald.
Yeah.
It's multiple sclerosis, that's what it is. Yeah, sclerotic lesions, okay. But they're not as deadly as this, and you can live longer with those diseases. And I think all the diseases in the same family, I think they should all be 100% service connected, and and it's the same requirements. That's my opinion.
When you come to neurological disorders, I do too, John. Due to the fact you don't know what you might have been exposed to unknowingly in the service. The service is a cesspool of agents, and. A lot of times them agents are all mixed up, and you don't know what combination. And it might not show up for quite a few years. Several years. And it'll just gradually move on you. And you say, well, son, I'm shaking here, you know.
Right. Well, Parkinson's is a big one. Agent Orange exposure, right?
I think so.
That's a presumptive for Agent Orange, so you know that
you
know Agent Orange has to have an effect on your neurological system.
Oh, you bet. Yeah. Oh, you bet it does.
And, you know, it could be anything, guys. Chemical exposures, you know, to anything. For you guys in the service in the 60s and 70s and the 80s, you know, there was all kinds of stuff out there. You had solvents, you had dry cleaning fluid, you had solvents for cleaning tools. You had everything in the world. We had a guy, matter of fact, on one of the ships beside us there. He died because he was overcome by fumes. He was cleaning some tools with them tanks.
And that
stuff got in there and killed him. So there's some deadly stuff out there. There's some deadly stuff out there, folks. And small doses of it don't kill you right off, but look what happens to you afterward.
It damages your nerves till they reach a state of start deteriorating.
Yeah, because your nerves are like a bundle cord, and you've got a fibrous outside. It's called the myelin. And once that rubs down, it's just short circuits everywhere. It's your electrical system is what it is. It's your electrical system.
It is, exactly. It's the same thing as, you know, a bare wire rubbing against another wire. It's shorting out.
Yeah. We don't catch on fire.
Your brain will send a signal down to your finger to move, and your thumb will move. You know, it gets all twisted up. It gets shorted out somewhere.
I wonder what happens when the fuse blows.
we needed a fuse box in these bodies of ours. I mean, that way we could.
There would be somewhere they could go in and wrap those nerves. You know what?
I don't know.
There'll be somewhere they can go in and wrap those nerves.
Boy, that'd be a tedious job, I think, John.
They do it anyway, though. But those folks that lose all that weight, have that skin cut off, that's a tedious job, too, if they do it.
Yes, they do. They do.
Sure do, so. It can be tedious.
Well, they can, that's where this stem cell is supposed to come in. I think that's to, some of that was supposed to help rebuild the nervous system or the,
they try to regenerate. Try to regenerate. You know, that could happen. I mean, that can, you know, of course, in the future, that's going to be a lot more advanced and, you know, they can do a lot of amazing things, but. As of right now, you know, we're still stuck in some ages that we, you know, things are medically impossible. Of course, they can do things now, you know, with artificial hearts and artificial limbs. They can link things to your nerves to move fingers and things like that, which is pretty cool. But in the near future, they're going to...
They sure have. They've made advances. It's unreal.
Or the MIT, they got a cure for PTSD.
Well, I was reading an article, believe it or not. Their PTSD, they said by sending the troops back over to Afghanistan, that would help them with their PTSD.
Really?
Did you read that one? Yeah, I read that one.
I had some reservations about that. I mean, yeah, send them back over there. As a visitor or over there to fight again?
No, over there fighting. Supposed to be over there and they claim it'll help them with their PTSD. And
I think they'll get over.
I've read that, and I tell you, I like to come unglued. It certainly don't make any rationale.
You don't have any rationale, Gerald. They're trying to cut. They're trying to close commissaries to save money. Ships are not getting even. Ships are missing their maintenance schedules, and we don't have the readiness that we used to have and things like that because of all the confusion that's put in by these folks. So you're going to hear stupid things like that. Because anytime you got a bunch of idiots running the show, then, you know, that's what you're going to get.
I never heard the like.
Yeah.
That's like running in a burning house. You more apt to save the house, you know.
Well, that's like running into a burning house because you left your wedding ring in there or something.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to be doing that stuff. Stay out of that house. And you know what, sending kids back to Afghanistan or to Iraq? There's no reason for that.
I can't imagine, you know.
I mean, look at World War II. Look at World War II. The Marine Corps. The island hopping all the way to Japan. They'd pull into one island. They'd go and take over the island. Then the Marines would pull out, and the Army would come in and take over and hold, you know, and occupy the island. The Marines would get back on a boat. They'd go to the next island after they reinforced and trained, you know. And there was none of these problems we had back then. I mean, of course, they were called shell shock and things like that. They had issues. Issues like that, you know, were basically a dime a dozen because these guys seen stuff that folks in today's military is not even getting close to see. You know,
yeah.
Back in the island helping campaigns, we had flamethrowers. And these flamethrowers were sticking that nozzle in a bunker or a cave or something and fry 100 people. You know, or witnessing women and children jumping off cliffs because they were taught that the Americans were going to be mean to them and mistreat them. You know,
there was a lot of that. Yeah,
there was a lot of that stuff. So, folks, you know, they ain't seen nothing. I mean, you know, you can say what you have seen, but these World War II vets saw it all. And, of course, World War II is a different issue, too, because the whole country was behind the military. And when they come back, they were heroes.
Yeah. That did make a difference, didn't it?
When we went to Vietnam, come back, we were spit on.
Yeah.
Yep. Now they're coming back, and they're not even, you know, it's like, oh, where you been, man? You know, everybody's just stuck in their own little worlds. It's a veteran, doesn't matter anymore, and it's a small percentage. Plus, using the National Guard over and over again to go over and fight external wars, you know, in the regular army and stuff, you know, that's pretty wild, too. Little guardsmen and troops. I guess it kept them from drafting, but look what it's done to our readiness.
I think that they should have left the National Guard right here at home and built up their regular army myself.
Yeah, a lot of guys in World War II and Vietnam got the draft notice.
Well, yes, they did. Matter of fact, I served with a bunch of draftees. You know, they all didn't go to Vietnam. I didn't go to Vietnam, but... they had draftees go up to Alaska, and
he'd probably been better off going to Vietnam. Sure, he'd been better off going to Vietnam.
I keep drinking that.
Yeah.
I thought, boy, I'm telling you, you talk about a bad situation. This is.
You could know what that dude from Arkansas did. He went to Canada.
Yeah. And got elected president, by the way. Yeah. I've seen it all now.
Lou Gehrig's disease is a terrible disease, folks. It's flat terrible. Anybody gets it, you know, that hearts go out to anybody's head or gets it, you know, in the future because, you know, that's an end-game disease. You know, and you've got 4 years to get your affairs in order and things like that. So that's one comforting thing about it, though, is if you're a relatively young person, you've got life insurance, that disease does qualify for, Gerald, where you can draw your life insurance out early while you're alive.
Oh, paid up life?
Yeah, so you got your life insurance, you can draw that early before you die.
Yeah.
That way you can make sure all your bills are paid and, you know, your family's been taken care of.
Yeah.
So it's all about readiness.
I think the main thing here, though, John, is getting the proper diagnosis. I believe there's people out there with it that's not properly diagnosed.
And they will be eventually. You know what, Gerald?
Absolutely.
That one's hard to miss. I mean, during the initial phases and the onset, yeah, you could have some diagnostic problems getting diagnosed. But this disease will show its head, its ugly head.
Yeah. And
right. But once they get the diagnosis correct, you're still going to get service connected for it back to the day you filed the claim because they'll fix the diagnosis. That falls into 3.156 also, so that's pretty good under effective dates.
That's important to get and they claim early on it mimics some of your other neurological disorders, so it's hard. It could be hard to diagnose early on, but later on there becomes no guessing about it. You know, it's pretty ironclad you have it.
It's kind of like a car. Okay, say you get a short and your radio stops working. Okay, well, you change the fuse out and still not working, so you know you got a short circuit. Well, you diagnose that as a short circuit, you try to fix it. Well, you get in the car the next day, and you look up, and you put the key ignition, turn it on, and your windshield wipers don't work. And then the next day, something else doesn't work. So that's how it goes. I mean, it's your body the same way, you know, when it starts falling apart like that with ALS. You know,
that's true.
So they might try to diagnose you as a short circuit from the first diagnosis because your radio quit working. But then when everything else stops working and everything else starts combining in, then they'll figure out, oh, my goodness, he's got ALS or something like that. That's how they'll figure that out. And there's tests they can do, too, if they want to spend the money on the test.
Yeah, it's more advanced now than what it was. I'd say 20 years ago, it had been a lot different story.
I'll tell you something else, folks. If you have this test done, and you have done the VA, I would also go outside and get a follow-up second opinion test from the outside.
I think that would pay.
I've been scared to death by the VA one time in my lifetime over a false test. And cancer diagnosis doesn't sit too well. You know what I mean, Joe?
Yeah, I sure do.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I've been scared to death like that one time before. And so I went on the outside and done some stuff and found out what it was, what it wasn't, you know. And but always get a second opinion. Really, no matter what condition you have, you get a VA diagnosis, you need to get a second opinion. You know,
I had one of those scares here a while back. What was it? They found blood somewhere they wasn't supposed to or something. Anyway, they got all excited. I think it had to do with my liver or something. But anyway, I went to my regular doctor here in town. Boy, I'm telling you, he run a battery of tests, even sent me over to the hospital to run tests, and it come back negative. So that's one of those tests. Now, I went down to the VA, they might have eventually figured it out, but...
Well, they got to figure out what kind of damage could be done, though, you know what I mean?
Hey, well, we're going to take care of that. Just have to lob this arm off, maybe that foot or something. And
it's like having that dream, Gerald. You know, a lot of us have the same dream. You're driving down the road, you're sitting in the car, and you go up a cliff. You never hit the bottom. You wake up before you do.
Or falling over a log.
If I fall out of an airplane or something like that, But always get a second, even any type of, you know, something major, you want to get a second opinion, especially if it's a life-threatening condition or a serious disease. And you might see the light. I mean, if you don't have insurance, then I can understand not getting one. But if you're Medicare age, you've got Medicare, don't waste the Part B because you think the VA is going to take care of you. Always get the Part B.
Yeah.
You know, it's worth $100 a month to have that because you have an option. You have options and avenues to do things like that. If you don't feel you're getting treated correctly at the VA, you can go outside the VA. They can't stop you doing it. And
get my card. What's that card called, John?
What's that care card? That's if you live in the past 40 miles of the VA, they're supposed to send you a card.
Yeah.
That's it. Wellness card.
Yeah.
Good luck using it, guys. Good luck using it, because you still got to get approval from the VA to use it.
Yes, you do. You're still going to their henchmen, their hired henchmen.
Yeah, they sent you that card. Doesn't mean you get to use it. You know, because you have to get approval to use it, you know. It's good for, for example, I think if you travel or something like that, you know, when you're out of town and you get sick or something like that, yeah, you can use it. Should be able to use it anyway.
Yeah.
And, because now, a lot of these towns, like, I posted on Hattie the other day, I guess it's in Oregon or somewhere like that, that the emergency room and the VA is closing at like 5 o'clock now or something like that in the afternoon.
Yeah.
The emergency room's closing.
That's
people
hard
get
to
sick.
Believe,
yeah, I think that'll be changed though pretty quick. I don't know who the rep is for that area for Congress, but if you're listening to the show, Mr. Rep, you need to get your head out of your certain cavity and get busy and get this thing fixed, because that's your constituents that are having problems with the VA, and
yes,
those constituents are your bosses. They can hire and fire you.
Yeah,
that's what needs to happen.
It is what needs to happen. There's no excuse for closing emergency room at 5 o'clock.
Right. If you
if they
are
don't
slow,
have enough personnel, they need to hire them. My God, it's the United
States.
Well,
isn't it due to a doctor shortage? A doctor shortage. Well, I'm sure they can find a doctor to work to be able to pay them enough money.
Well. They got to pay them a fair wage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't. They shouldn't. They're trying to get everybody to work for scab labor. I mean, what's wrong with them?
Yeah. Doctors get paid pretty good money at the VA. You know, of course, they can make more on the outside, I think, in private practice. But just think of what they're saving. Look at the insurance they save.
Doctors do much at the VA. They sign off for what the nurse practitioners do.
A lot of them do. A lot of attendings do that. They sure do.
Some good nurse practitioners, though, but sometimes you do need a real doctor.
I say more times than not you need a real doctor, because nurse practitioners, bless their heart, they went to nursing school. I'm sure they've got some education, continuing education credits, things like that. They got their master's degree. They're still a nurse. They didn't go to an accredited medical school and get an MD degree.
No.
Okay. So that's the main issue. I mean, it's nothing to do with, I'm not knocking nurses at all. I mean, love them all. They're good people. But still, there are certain levels of expertise and education experience-wise that I want somebody looking at me that knows what he's doing. And the nurses do the same thing, but, you know, it's a big if. I want somebody with a degree to back it up. Because I've seen so many of these CMP exams, some of these nurse practitioners that, you know, they take a CMP exam, they get the leading questions in the regional office, and they kind of agree with it. Especially COPD and smoking, that's a big issue. Certain things like that. So, you know, you have to be able to put medical literature, and you have to bring your medical opinion and put a nexus, and you have to have a clarified opinion, and you have to have the literature, and you have to have the studies done to back your opinion to prove your point. That's the biggest issue. That's what a nexus is. Okay. They just can't come up and say that Mr. Johnson's ALS is a result of service, which is presumptive. It should be automatic. You know, it's a nurse practitioner saying that. This has to come from the person saying, I believe that Mr. So-and-so's condition is a result of service, or at least as likely as not a result of service, and here's the reason why. A plus B equals C plus D, you know, and things like that. They have to write a good nexus. And,
well,
that's
usually a CMP examiner, it's hard to get that out of them. They do it for whatever reason. I guess because they're afraid of their job, losing their job.
Actually,
but they have a tendency to deny everything. They run it down, just make an idiot out of it.
Right. I want to give a shout out to a CMP examiner. He left here a while back. I think he's in Colorado now. His name is Tom Bickle. I think he's a nurse practitioner. But I'm going to tell you something. This guy, he does it. He does it right. So, anybody in the Colorado area, if you go for a CMP exam, say hi to Tom.
Well, that's good. I know there's some good ones. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, good people. I've had two good CMP examiners in my lifetime. One was an occupational doc, so that's another important factor is the level of quality experience you get with a doctor, too. You know, so if you're going to, for example, Social Security, you know, you need occupational specialists because Social Security basically means if you file a claim for Social Security for disabled Social Security, it means that you can't work. And their definition of disability is totally different than the VA. The VA is based on a percentage base of the amount of compensation or money that you lose your disability costs you while working, right?
Yes.
Well, Social Security is different. It has to last at least a year or result in your death. But that means you can't work at all. It precludes working.
Yeah, that's true.
So they can discriminate age-wise. That gives them the opportunity to discriminate against a person by age. And Social Security is a little different issue because you file a claim with the VA, and the VA is the one that processes and adjudicates that claim. That's a federal agency. Social Security is a different issue. You file a claim, it goes to a place in your state, gets gathered up and put together and looked at by your state. It's called Disability Determination Services. It don't even go to Social Security until after the second denial. Do you know that, Joe?
Oh, it don't.
Right. And people call me liar and everything else, but that's the way it happens. And they've got usually some pretty shoddy folks doing this in the first denial stages. That's why. Because 60% of the people get denied their first Social Security claim.
I know a lot of them that got denied.
Out of that 60%, 80% or more went at the judge level, administrative law judge.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a stopgap. In-place denial service is what it is.
That's what it is.
I think something should be done about that. You know, people with terminal cancer get...
That's for sure. I was reading there on Habit where several veterans was having issues with their Social Security disability.
Right.
And they shouldn't have.
Yeah, they shouldn't have.
You know.
But
I was lucky. I didn't have any trouble, but I know a lot of people that have.
And most people don't go to work wearing oxygen masks, Earl, and you did.
Yeah, I got in trouble for that.
Bless your heart,
you know,
man.
I liked working.
I did, too. I enjoyed working. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I wish I could do it again.
I enjoyed my job.
I enjoyed it, too. I really had fun.
But you reach a point where they shut you down, you got to shut down.
Now, you know there's a directive under Social Security that if you're 100% permanent total veteran, disabled veteran, they're supposed to actually process your claim faster and help you. I've seen it work a couple times, but if you're filing a VA claim and you get your 100% and Social Security's jacking you around, you need to send up a copy of that ward letter to Social Security. That should get them to go ahead and take care of business.
I think so. I think that has a lot to do with it.
And if you're Social Security sends you, every so many years, they send you a little piece of letter saying they're going to re-examine or re-evaluate you, or they're looking at you, you know, to make sure that your disabilities have not improved. I think if you're a 100% disabled veteran, send them the VA stuff and your permanent and total status, because permanent total in the VA means permanent and total, no future exams.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a leave me the heck alone letter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it should be, though. They shouldn't discriminate from government agencies for a disability. For example, if you're 100% permanent total disabled veteran from the VA and you have a long-term disability plan, and they deny your long-term disability plan because they say you can work, but the VA's got you listed as permanent total disabled, then who should win that claim?
Yeah, they should. I mean, you know.
That's under their ERISA law.
If you're 100% at one, and you should be 100% the other with no argument.
You should be. I think you ought to be able to go back and file suit and get that fixed.
That might be possible on some of these that's had a claim in a long time.
That's possible.
Which would be a good thing.
You know, I like to see that, and I'll talk to a couple of attorneys about that and see what happens, because some of these insurance companies could lose a lot of money to these veterans. They've been cut off, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a lot of money over a certain period of time. It's kind of like a savings account.
Well, it is.
Yeah, so you figure $700 or $800 a month times 7 or 8 years, you know.
I know people that have had to go back 7 or 8 years and pay them their Social Security, and mm-hmm. that's a pretty good wad of money.
Yep. The best thing about taxes on it, though, is they break it down for a year, too.
Yeah.
Because even though you shouldn't pay Social Security taxes, if you get a big chunk of money, you're going to have to pay taxes on down.
Yeah.
It's just
now,
the bottom
line.
You
don't from the VA, but you do from Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
That's taxable income.
That's right. I call it taxable. I call it tax-free and protected. For example, and let me try to explain this the best way. Okay, they cannot charge you any federal or state taxes on your VA compensation because it's not considered income. It's considered disability compensation. Social Security is tax-free unless your spouse makes over a certain amount of money per year, and then only a percentage of that is taxable. Usually about 85%. Is that right, Gerald?
It's something similar to that, yeah.
Yeah. So, but the protection's kicking the play, too. And here's one good thing about VA compensation. Social Security is basically under a very similar law, okay? If any reason, say you've had some bad luck and you pile up some credit card debt and you can't pay the bill, and they go through and they try to garnish your bank account, they can't do it. Law protects that funds for the veteran. The bank might freeze your account, but you have to explain to the bank they're in violation of federal law and give them so many hours. I'd give them minutes myself, but you can give them so many hours to get it unfrozen because they're not allowed to freeze your account. There's one exception to that rule. If you owe the government or child support in some cases like that, in certain areas, then they can take it. Student loans and things like that, you know. Of course, they usually take that out. But if you get 100% permanent total and you've got student loans, you can always ask for a waiver of that debt. And a major majority or percentage of the time, they will waiver that debt. Do you know that, Gerald?
I've heard that, and I know of people that's got that debt waivered, veterans, and which is a good thing.
Yeah, so there's benefits out there for the veteran that, you know, they're undeniable. That's not to say that you have an issue and you can't pay your bills. You just stop paying your bills, okay? your shiny new car out in the parking lot out here, you know, they're going to come and get it because they can because it's secured by the car. Okay?
Yeah,
but they can't reach into your bank account and take your money.
Yeah.
So, that's it in a nutshell. So, that's kind of a, you know, this it's good to have a show like this explain things like that so people understand a little better. And I try to put things in terms easy to understand because some of these folks use these legal terms. And we all know the VA has a separate language, you know, they use. So, of course, you can say how many languages you speak. So you speak English, so you speak VA, you speak, even speak bad things. That's a different language.
You know, John, I really ain't figured their gibberish out. I call it gibberish because I can read something and talk to them about it, and they're reading something different than I am. We're reading the same paragraph.
Some of these folks get on the road.
That's not the way I'm reading it. Yeah, I've got this story lots of times.
Some of the folks get on the road and they start using all these big words and all the adverbs and you know, using all the words for the VA. And they write this big, long post up, and you're sitting there, and people don't understand. They're sitting in the corner wondering, what the heck is that, you know?
Yeah.
You just about have to have a dictionary in order to. You have to have a dictionary in order to offset that, you know.
Yeah,
or
you got to look these words up.
Get extremely involved and do what hadits.com is there for an education. You know, Hadits really good for helping folks and teaching folks the steps and the ropes. You know,
that's
it
true.
Does, it breaks. It does. It breaks. You know, it breaks the monotony. And it helps you a lot. So,
and if you have a question, put it there on Hadit. By golly, somebody will answer it. And you know, the ones that are well-versed, we have numerous ones that are well-versed in BA law, and they can help you a lot. They can steer you in the right direction. What you think is right may not be right. That's the hardest thing to deal with. Say, this can't be right. It's not fair or what. Well, just don't get too excited. Just go to Hadit and read through there. Find a claim that's similar to yours and just kind of read down through the suggestions. And chances are you'll pick up on, well, here's why I'm going wrong, you know.
Once you read that, and once they pass you the football and you take off running with it, it's kind of like Forrest Gump. Once you take off running with it, they got to put people in the end zone to stop you from running out of the stadium.
Like I say, there's a lot of knowledgeable people there, and you can ask a question. Don't be afraid to ask a question. There ain't no dumb questions.
There is no.
Well, maybe I might ask one, but.
Anyway. No, there is no. There is no dumb questions. I mean, don't even think about asking a dumb question. If you got a question to ask, go ahead and ask it. You know, I want to say it's probably been asked before, but, you know, I mean, it revolves. It's like a clock, you know, it goes on and on and on. So if you've got a question, and you can research and things like that too and see if you can find some stuff, but if you've got a question, ask it. I'm sure Berta or Basher or John or Asnod or any good folks been on Hadit for a long time will come and help you. There's Bronco Vet, he's knowledgeable, he's really good. So
they'll refer you to a claim or something. They'll tell you where to look to get your answer.
That's right,
and you know they'll give you a link or something there, and that's important. That saves you a lot of lost time and heartache,
and headaches.
And headaches, oh boy.
Yeah. So, and there's a couple of folks on Hadit that are pretty much, you know, they're very knowledgeable in a lot of different areas. You know, and you've got some pinpoint people that I just basically they're a specialist. And they're not, you know, I call them specialists because they're specialized in certain areas. As far as, you know, like, for example, you've got a couple of folks really good in PTSD. You've got a couple of folks that are good in, you know, they're good with the heart and the lungs and the neck and the back. And you got some folks that are good with other issues like diabetes and neuropathy. And there's just, you know, it's veterans helping veterans.
Yes, that's what it is. And and hopefully it puts you on the straight and narrow, and you'll be successful with your claim, and you'll return the favor by coming on and helping veterans, other
right.
new veterans yourself. Everybody needs to help some. Just help out the best you can. No one expects miracles or an Einstein.
Right. Now, let's close out the section on ALS real quick. Let's kind of rehash it a little bit, and then we'll go into something else. So, you know, if you get a diagnosis of ALS, you served in the service 90 days or more, which 90 days, usually you're stint in boot camp and in your school, because the first 8 weeks is probably going to be boot camp, so you got 60 days knocked out right there, right?
Yeah.
And you got your school, so usually everybody gets past that, you know, they qualify. So you get a diagnosis of ALS, you file your claim with the VA, show them that you're being diagnosed with it. They should make your effective date the date you were diagnosed with it. It should go from there. Of course, you got an outside diagnosis, they probably want to get their own diagnosis and run their own tests. You know, they're entitled to do that, so that's fine. You know, if they shouldn't, they should rely on other information. But sometimes they'll do it, misdiagnose it, and cause you some problems. But still, it's, you know, it'll work out for you in the long run. And just make sure that I would keep your paper out, folks, every time you have an issue. For example, you start having arm problems, things like that, and you can't move your arms or your legs, you start filing in claims to keep getting anything increased, because you're going to have aid attendance, you're going to have housing grants, you're going to have a vehicle grant, anything else to get you from point A to point B. You're going to have doctors come in the house and see you and give you tests and things like that, so aid attendance has got to kick in. And eventually you'll get a high level of SMC, which is good for you, you know, at the time, but I also recommend you go ahead and fill the paperwork out for DIC and get everything ready for your wife to turn in, you know, when you pass away. It's about time we did another show on that, Gerald.
Yeah,
we did a show a couple
file.
Years ago. Yeah, on a death file.
Maybe that sounds morbid, but it's something that's a necessity for every veteran.
Morbid but necessary, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. What to do.
It can certainly save your spouse a lot of heartache and trying to figure stuff out. And it's critical. It's
just critical.
Part of the process, and it helps prepare your family and make life so much easier for them.
Yeah, because once you pass, it'll never get any easier. But I mean, it does make bearing the coping with the issue a lot better.
Well, it does, and you'll say, boy, I'm glad we done this, because you need your birth certificates and marriage license and all kinds of stuff in their DD-214s.
Yeah. We've lost some good folks that had it, you know, over the years, that, you know, really, really beneficial to had it and really helpful to had it. And, you know, we lost a test vet here a while back, and
that's,
you know, he'd done the show before, and he was really good. Matter of fact, I actually sent copied the show and downloaded it, and actually sent it on a disc or a CD to his family so they can, you know, have something to listen to. If they want to hear his voice, they can listen to that show. Well, I think it was a pretty good gesture, Gerald.
I thought it was wonderful. And he was involved with some mighty fine shows, too. He was very knowledgeable.
Oh, they treated that man terrible.
Yeah. He would help any veteran.
He would. We've had some good ones. We had a couple, you know, we had Florida Viking. He passed away. He was a PTSD vet. His PTSD got the best of him.
Yeah.
You know, so, and he passed away a couple of years ago, but he's telling us a story once about he's parked in the parking garage of the VA and somebody ran a car up under his truck.
Yeah.
All the way up under it. So that's a pretty wild story.
Yeah.
But now, we've got a few minutes left. I wanted to touch on something that's pretty beneficial, pretty important. When you file a claim with the VA, if you were injured in service and you have documentation of that injury and you went to the doctor and things like that in service and you know it should be a slam dunk, you need to ask for a direct service connection. If you are in a presumptive period and have a presumptive issue, like say if you have ALS or something that's presumptive and you're within a time period, ask for a presumptive ALS. If you have hypertension problems and you were diagnosed within your first post-service year of service, it's got a 1-year presumptive, so ask for presumptive. If you were diagnosed with it or had high blood, you don't have to be diagnosed with it. If you had a certain amount of high blood pressure readings in service, and if they're high enough to be compensable, say, for example, your bottom line's over 100 and your top line's over 160, both don't have to be just one, either or, okay? Then you ask for direct service connection. Because I've got a feeling one of these days they're going to come out and they're going to say they're going to start cutting back on these presumptives and start awarding, you know, they're going to keep the directs. You know, anything's possible especially with the sharks that are in the world today. There's less veterans ever in Congress than ever has been.
Yeah.
So less, you know, and what happens there is they start, you get these people start writing these laws and changing this and that because they don't really care, you know. They don't care about the veterans. The only thing they're worried about is people in their own state. And you can see it, the writing's on the wall. If the system lasts long enough.
Yeah, the VA's always changing, so...
Always.
And sometimes it's not for the better. It's for,
right.
You know,
it's
poor
for their
veteran.
Favorite.
He's got to bend with the willow.
Mm-hmm. And, remember, what's that law? What's that law, Gerald, for every positive reaction, there's equal negative reaction?
Oh.
Is that Newton's law or Murphy's law or what's that law?
Newton's law, ain't it?
Every equal positive reaction is an equal negative reaction. So everything the VA does in one aspect has a negative reaction on the other aspect.
Uh-huh.
And that's true. That is definitely true. You know, and you guys battled Agent Orange claims. Say, for example, you were exposed to Agent Orange and you went in Vietnam. Don't ask for presumptive service connection because they're not going to give it to you. But if you can prove that you were exposed to it, like here or wherever, ask for a direct service connection.
Yes.
Okay.
And
those little key buzzwords could win your client. You wouldn't believe, you would not believe how the word or, how powerful that little two-letter word is. We always think of or as, you know, if you don't have an or in a boat, you ain't rowing nowhere.
No.
Hmm. All right, so put it in like that, you know, or, and, so if you file a claim, you want to use, for example, you want to file a claim for a condition, a musculoskeletal condition to include a cervical spine injury and a back injury or whatever in service. You don't want to go pinpoint an issue because there could be a misdiagnosis involved, but you've got the gambit covered with that injury. See what I'm saying, Gerald?
I always use and or.
And or.
Yeah.
Or.
And or.
Well,
you got to have that or in there. And one word to always look out for from the VA, may.
May, yeah, may,
see,
may, may.
If you see may,
but,
you better look twice.
Remember that or and. It's better to use two oars in your claim because you got one oar in the water, you're going to go around in circles.
Yeah.
unless you're switching sides of the boat. But I usually use an outboard, so we'll be all right.
Yeah, there you go. I'm on an outboard.
Mm. Well, Drew, we're out of time, buddy. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I tell you what, I think it was a pretty doggone good show.
I think it is, too. We'll talk in a few minutes, and we'll do a recap. But, folks, thanks for listening. Join us Wednesday for our next Had It Blog Talk SVR show. And if you guys need anything, always give us a shout-out at Had It. You can reach me at Jay Bassrell in the PM section of Had It. You can also look up Gerald. He's just Jerel. You can send him a PM, too. You know, we'll be happy to get your messages. And if you got a question to ask on the show, just shoot it. We'll ask it.
You bet. We'll try our best.
This will be Jay Basher. We'll be signing off for now.
Okay, goodbye, folks.
All right. You've been listening to the Hadit.com Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by Hadit.com. All opinions expressed here are the opinions of the individuals appearing on the show, and are not the opinions of Hadit.com or Blog Talk Radio. Tune in next time for another edition of Hadit.com Blog Talk Radio and the Ask Basher Show.